All right, Haksamayak again.
Haksamayak.
And I have a message today. I think it's apropos being in a sukkah, as we are in here, called temporary dwellings. We'll hope that this sukkah will stay together until the end of the sermon. It may be more temporary than we think. The more independent and self-reliant a person is, the greater his talents, the healthier that he is, the higher his standard of living, the less likely he is to be concerned about his relationship with Elohim. So I'm going to read that again, because sometimes people ask me, you know, oh, my relative, my father, my mother, my husband, my wife, my friend, they're such a good person, you know, and they're so kind. Why don't you think Yahweh called them? Or why don't you think they're coming to faith? And again, the more independent and self-reliant a person is, the greater his talents, the healthier he is, the higher his standard of living, the less likely he is to be concerned about his relationship with Elohim. The better that things are going in life, human nature feels, who needs Elohim, right? And that's why where you see Yahweh working more with people today is more in third world than it is in the first world. Even though it's Yahweh who gave the blessings to the person, right? But most of the people don't recognize that it's coming from him. So the message is on temporary dwellings. As here it is Sukkot, I want to start in Leviticus 23, starting in verse 39. It says, also in the 15th day of the seventh month, when you gather the increase of the land, you shall keep the feast of Yahweh 7 days. On the first day, a holy day Sabbath, and on the eighth day, a holy day Sabbath. So again, you know, the first day of the feast and the last day, they're regular Sabbath days. Everything that we do on Shabbat, you know, we don't do any preparation. We don't do any work. We don't do any buying and selling. All those things we also do on the holy day. And you shall take to yourself on the first day the fruit of majestic trees, palm branches, boles of thick oak trees, and willows of the valley. And you shall rejoice before Yahweh Elohim 7 days. And you shall celebrate it a feast to Yahweh 7 days in a year, a never-ending statute throughout your generations. In the seventh month you shall keep it. You shall sit in sukkahs. That's why we're sitting in a sukkah for 7 days. All who are native in Israel shall sit down in sukkahs. And why? Why are we doing this? The next verse. So that your generations, the ones to come, shall know that I caused the children of Israel to live in sukkahs when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh your Elohim. And Moses declared the appointed feast of Yahweh to the sons of Israel. So, like we said, when the cloud moved, the people moved. It can be a day, it can be a week, it could be a month, it could be a year or several years. But the cloud didn't stay in the same place for 40 years. A matter of fact, there was 42 different stops. And Yahweh did that. Why? Because they were not supposed to build a life in the wilderness. They were supposed to live in the wilderness. They were supposed to be fulfilled in the wilderness, but they weren't to build a life in the wilderness. The wilderness was a place to prepare them for something greater, the promised land. And that's what he's saying to us. When we keep Sukkot every year, the reason why we're supposed to be in this kind of setting, we're supposed to be staying in a tent or a sukkah, sleeping, and we're supposed to be having our meetings here in a sukkah, is the reason why, to teach us about the children of Israel, that we are a temporary dwelling. Life is a temporary dwelling. Everything is a temporary dwelling. And we're supposed to get this through our head, because as human nature, like I said, as life goes better, as your job is better, as you're making more money, as you're more secure, as you're healthier, what happens? You tend to forget Yahweh, and you want to live for yourself. And what does mankind do in those circumstances? Let's go to Psalm 49. Psalm 49 in verse 6 says, those who trust in their wealth and in their many riches boast themselves. A man cannot at all redeem a brother, nor give to Elohim a ransom for him, right? So each person can only be for themselves. Drop down to verse 10. For he sees wise men die, together the fool and the animal-like ones perish and leave their riches to others. But their inward thought is that their houses will last forever, their dwelling places to all generations. They call lands after their own names, right? Trump Tower. but not only Trump Tower. We see everywhere you go. They do this because they think they're going to live forever, but man shall not remain high in honor. He is like the animals. He shall be cut off. So this is why, you know, death is the most natural thing in the world, right? And it should be something that is mournful at the time, right? When someone dies, we know you mourn for 30 days. We see it with Jacob. We see it with Abraham, with Sarah, with all the different people. But it shouldn't be the end of the world, because if you're born, you're going to die. But today, in the facade of Babylon, nobody thinks about death. Nobody wants to think about death. And if somebody gets cancer, even if it's stage 4 cancer, and they say you have a month to live, it's like, no, it'll be okay. No, we're going to overcome this. We're going to beat this. Why? There's a time to be born, there's a time to die. What do you mean beat it? If it's your time to go, it's your time to go. But this is man's way. They don't want to see that they're a sukkah. They're a temporary dwelling. They want to think they're going to live forever, right? And that's why they want to name cities after themselves, and they want to name streets after themselves. They want to build houses, and they never want to think about to dust you come, to dust you shall return. But this is what Sukkot is supposed to be about. It's supposed to show us that this journey, right? Everything is done in cycles of 7. It's another cycle of 7. That's all our journey is. And I love showing the people when we build the sukkah and you look at the fruit, because when we build it and we have the palm leaves and they're all green and you see those beautiful pomegranates and the different fruits, and in 7 short days, they're all withered. And that's our life cycle. You know, sukkah is a 7, right? It's one cycle. Ours is a couple more 7s. Someone might get 3 7s. Someone might get 5 or 6 or 7. But none of us gets eternal 7s. Until the kingdom comes. And this is what Sukkot is all about. It's to teach us to number our days. To teach us to number our days. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. And this is why this is the book that's read at this time of the year, right? I used to think Sukkot is about feasting and fun. And all. Why would you read Ecclesiastes until you really understand what Sukkot is about? You know. Ecclesiastes 1, starting in verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What is the profit to a man in all his labor which he labors under the sun? A generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth stands forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes even panting to its place. It rises there again. The wind goes toward the south and turning around to the north. The wind is going around and around, and the wind returns on its circuits. All the rivers are going to the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers are going, there they are returning to it again. Right? Everything works in the circular pattern, like we always say. All words are wearisome. A man is not able to say it. The eye is not satisfied to see, nor is the ear filled with hearing. And that's one of the most disdainful things of life, that human nature just is never satisfied, right? They're just never satisfied. They always have to have more. There's never a point in life where people are just content to say, you know what? I'm very content where I am. I'm very happy. I'm very blessed, the way someone like Abraham was. Man is not able to say it. The eye is not satisfied to see, nor is the ear filled with hearing. That which has been, it is that which shall be. And that which has been done, it is that which will be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Is there a thing of which one might say, see this? It is new. It has already been for the ages which were before us. So basically, like it said, he's talking more about human nature, the way people do things, right? And even in the Bible, we see some of these stories, and I chuckle, and I think, wow, that's the same way people think today. They think the same way that we do today. Let's go to chapter 2, verse 8. And again, this is Shlomo, King Solomon, who's speaking. I also gathered to me silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I made ready male singers and female singers for myself, and the delight of the sons of men, a concubine and concubines. And I became great and increased more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom stayed with me. And all that my eyes desired, I did not set aside from them. I withheld not my heart from all joy, for my heart rejoiced from all my labor. And this was my part from all my labor. Then I faced on all my works that my hands had done, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and lo, all was vanity and striving after wind, and there is no prophet under the sun. And this is the wisest man that ever lived. This is the richest man that ever lived. This is somebody that anything he wanted, he got. And what does he say at the end of his life? Didn't make me happy. Didn't make me happy. It's all vanity. And that's why I say, you look today, look at some of the richest people in the world, Hollywood people, sports players. They're the most miserable people in the world, unhappy people in the world, because it's not material things that are going to give you those blessings. And I turn to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can a man do who comes after the king when they have already done it? Then I saw that there is advantage to wisdom above folly, even as light has advantage over darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And I also know that one event happens to them all. And I also said in my heart, as the eyes of the foolish one, even so will happen to me. And why then was I more wise? Then I said in my heart that this too is vanity. For there is not a memory of the wise more than the fool forever. And that already the days to come will be forgotten. And how does the wise die above the fool? So then I hated life because the work that is done under the sun is evil to me. For all is vanity and striving after wind. And the sad part with King Solomon is, in a worldly sense, he's absolutely right, right? This is what every person who's rich, and because even if you're rich and you live a good life and you do everything you want, there comes a time that you're going to die, right? But the people, they don't want to die because their whole hope is in this life. But for us, wow, I would hope I would never write something like that. You're bearing fruit for the kingdom, right? I would be like the Apostle Paul. I'd rather say, "Wow, I'm ready to go. You know, I've conquered what I need to do. You know, I'm ready to go to the kingdom." But King Solomon wasn't like that. When you're seeking material things, that's the way your life is going to be. It's never going to be fulfilled. It's never going to be happy. And this is why we're here at Sukkot. We're here to realize that our life is a sukkah. It's going to come and it's going to go in a cycle of a seven, and that's going to be it. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 6. It says, "But our gain is greater contentment, for it is the worship of Elohim." We just read that. I'm going to read in another sermon too, because it's a great scripture. When I do the sermon on worship, I'm going to read that. But it's a great scripture. "But our gain is greater contentment, for it is the worship," right? Our contentment is actually worship to Elohim. "For we have brought nothing into the world, and it is plain that neither can we carry anything out. But having food and clothing, let us be satisfied with these." It doesn't even say, you know, it just says food and clothing. It doesn't even say shelter. Because many of them slept outside, you know. Jacob slept on a rock, right? "With food and clothing, let us be content. But those purposing to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and hurtful lusts, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all evil, by means of which some have lusted after and were seduced by the faith, and they themselves pierced through by many pains." So again, many people misinterpret this. It doesn't say money is the root of all evil. Matter of fact, there's another scripture in Ecclesiastes that says money is the answer to everything. Maybe not everything, but some things money is the answer. But it says the love of money. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil. Because the love of money will make you compromise. It will make you lie. It will make you do things you never thought you could do. And it changes people, you know. So the love of money is the root of all evil. If we go to Psalm 90. Because like I said, it's a great lesson that Sukkot is to teach us. The lesson of temporary dwellings. Psalm 90. Verse 1 through 3. And this is one of my favorite psalms, not because it's just an awesome psalm, but it's the only psalm I know of that was written by Moses. You know, when you think about it, that Moses wrote this psalm is pretty special, right? A prayer of Moses, the man of the Elohim. "O Yahweh, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were born, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are El. You turn man to dust and say, 'Return, O sons of men.'" Let's drop down to verse 9. "For our days pass away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. The days of our years are 70, if any has strength, maybe 80. Yet their pride is labor and vanity, for it soon passes and we fly away," right? That's why I said 70 is an endpoint. It's like the life cycle. It's an end point. In verse 12, so teach us to number our days so that we may bring a heart of wisdom. And remember, Moses wrote this in the wilderness, right? He wrote this as he's living as an older man now, 40 years with the children of Israel in the same setting we're here today. So what is he saying? Teach us to number our days so that we may bring a heart of wisdom. You know, it's wisdom to understand. To dust we come, to dust we shall return. We need to number our days. And like I said, Moses was talking about this in the wilderness, and Sukkot is picturing the kingdom. So Sukkot is not just picturing the life cycle and the shortness. The whole thing is picturing the eternal cycle to come. And that's why, as much as Sukkot is not about staying in five-star hotels and taking maybe cruise ships and all this other stuff, it's about doing what we're doing here. But it's also about eating good food and having good fellowship. And it's about the eternal kingdom, that will be eternal. That all the things that are good for us that we're supposed to be doing at Sukkot, they're all things that are eternal that will never end, right? And this is what we should be learning during this time. Jacob 4 and verse 13. Jacob 4 and verse 13 says, come now, those saying, today or tomorrow we will go into this city and we will spend 1 year there and we will trade and prosper, who do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is a vapor which appears for a little, then it disappears. Instead, you should say, if Yahweh wills, even we shall live and we will do this and that. But now you boast in your presumptions. All such pride is evil, right? And it's pride. It's pride to think that we're going to live even one more day on our own, right? And that's why I say, you plan as if you're going to live 1,000 years, but you live as if it's your last day on life. And anything you're planning, you always say, Yahweh wills. Yahweh willing. Because none of us know. None of us know if this will be our last day on this earth. But he says, humans that want to make all these plans and they want to boastfully about this and I'm going to build this and I'm going to build that like Nebuchadnezzar, right? And what happens? Little do they know, his life is going to be taken that night. Like the man who was going to tear down his towers and build bigger towers so he could store more things. Little did he know his life would be taken that night. Our life is a vapor. Human beings can't change one hair on their head, right? And believe me, I know it. Everyone I lose, I realize. But I'm trying to make it easier for Yahweh, because it says he knows how many hairs are on your head. So the more I lose, I'm making his job easy. We go to the book of Job. Job, which is a really interesting book, and the oldest book of the Bible. Job is at least a contemporary with Abraham, maybe older than Abraham even. He's a priest and a king of Yahweh. He's over there at Mount Seir where Yahweh's dwelling. And it's a really interesting book, not just on self-righteousness and those things, but very, very much wisdom in there. And look what Job says. Job 9 and verse 25. Now my days are swifter than a runner. They flee away. They see no good. They have passed away like the ships made of reed as an eagle swoops on food. So that's what he's saying. It's the same way, you know, you leave a piece of food out there and as you're turning around to get your water, it's like, where did it go? And it's gone. I used to have a cat that used to do that, you know. He could even get into my stove. He'd get one paw this way and the other paw that way and my pizza's gone, you know. But it's quick like that, like a bird zooming down and taking it away. So that's the way our life is. That's what he's saying. Job understood that, and Job understood the resurrection also, which is amazing. There's a lot of interesting things we could learn from Job. 1 Chronicles 29, how about King David, right? A man after Yahweh's own heart. What did he have to say? 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 14 says, yea, for who am I and who are my people that we should be able to offer willingly in this way? For all is of you, and we have given to you out of your hand. For we are strangers before you, and settlers like our fathers. Our days are on the land, are like a shadow, and there is none abiding. Can you imagine King David, the king of the land, is saying that he's a sojourner, he's a settler, like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And he knew it. And you know, it's really interesting because as much as David was really, really blessed in a lot of ways, he only lived to that 70 years. And at 70, it says he was an old man. You know, 70 isn't that old to be old. We see other people at that time living to even 100, you know. But he knew it. He knew it to number his days were from there. Psalm 39, also from King David. Psalm 39, verse 4 and 5, and then I'll go down to verse 12. He says, "O Yahweh, make me to know my end and the limit of my days. What is it? Let me know how lacking I am. Behold, like a handbreadth you gave my days, even my life was non-existence before you." Verse 12, "Hear my prayer, O Yahweh, and give ear to my cry. Do not be silent at my tears, for I am an alien with you, a pilgrim, as were my fathers." Right? He's an alien, and he's a pilgrim. And you know, the reason why Yahweh wants us to do this is because it's humbling. It's humbling when you realize, you know, wow, like, I look now, and I turned 55 years old this year, and I could remember being in high school like it was yesterday. I could remember being 16 years old, going to my locker. It's like vivid in my mind. Sometimes even dreams come up like that. And you don't realize that almost 40 years have passed. You know, 40, I say it could be number of trial or number of overcoming, depending on how you look at it. But you can't believe how fast time goes in this life. And I realize now my life is at least, if I'm blessed to live that way, at least to 70, my life is at least three quarters over. Two-thirds, three-quarters, right? It goes so fast. It's like a handbreadth. But the time doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. I could go today, you know. Like I say, you look at Stephen in Acts 7. He died at 30 years old. But look at the impression he left on the world. Look at Yeshua. He was only 32, 33. And look at the impression he left on the world. There's nobody in the history of man that has touched life on this planet more than Yeshua has. So it's not the extension of years, because you know what? People who live longer aren't necessarily going to serve Yahweh any better, right? It's what we do with the time that we have. That's what matters. What we do with a little bit of time. And actually, when we realize of temporary dwellings and we learn to number our days, then you're going to realize I might not live more than 30 years or 40 years or 50 years. I got to take advantage of today. I can't wait. I can't be like that man that says, you know, I'm going to tear down my barns and build bigger barns. We can't do that because you have no idea. You know, I look every year. We see brethren that might have been with us 1 year, and the next year they're gone. They could have died, or some of them could have fallen away. That's another thing. If you take for granted, not just dying, but spiritually dying, and if you take for granted your spiritual life with Yahweh, and the fact that your life is temporary, what good is it if you live to 500, you know, if you're falling away? Genesis 2 and verse 7. Genesis 2 and verse 7. I'm going to hope the sukkah lasts till the end of the message. It might be more temporary, like we said, than we thought. "And Yahweh Elohim formed the man from the dust of the ground, and he blew into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living soul." So this dust we see blowing up here, that's us. That's all we are. We're made from dirt and water, and Yahweh blew his into us and made us into a living soul. Genesis 3:19. It says, "By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread until you return to the ground. For you have been taken out of it, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return." Right? Do we realize that? You know, when you're outside, and maybe you get mud on yourself, and you're like, "Ugh, I got this mud. I got it." You realize that's you. You know, that's you. That's that mud is. That dirt is. That's all we are. And yet we want to, in our pride, we want to elevate ourselves, and we want to make ourselves feel like we're something more than that, and we really aren't. You know, without the Spirit of Yahweh, that's all we are. We're a blob of dust that's there on the ground. We will return to dust when we die. We are temporary, just like the sukkah at Tabernacles. Psalm 78. Reading that earlier. Now I'll read a different part of it. Psalm 78. And I'm going to start in verse 38. Psalm 78, starting in verse 38. He says, "But he, Yahweh, being merciful, atoned for their iniquity and did not destroy. And he added to turn away his anger. And he did not stir up his wrath. For he remembered that they were flesh, a breath passing away and not returning. So in Yahweh's unending mercy and love and kindness, he realizes that we're flesh. He realizes our limitations. How often they disobeyed him in the wilderness, angering him in the desert. Wow, here we are in the same exact place. How often they disobeyed him in the wilderness, angering him in the desert. Yea, they turned back and tested El and pained the Holy One of Israel. They did not remember his hand on the day he redeemed them from the enemy, who set his sign in Egypt and his wonders in the field of Zoan. He turned their rivers into blood and their streams that they might not drink. He sent swarms of flies against them that they devoured them, also frogs that they destroyed them. He also gave their crops to the stripping locusts and their labor to the locusts. He killed their vines with hail and their sycamore trees with sleet. He gave their cattle up to the hail and their flocks to the bolts of fire. He sent the heat of his anger on them, fury and indignation and distress, a sending of messengers of evil. He leveled a path for his anger. He did not keep back their soul from death, but he gave their life over to the plague. And he struck all the firstborn in Egypt, the firstfruits of strength in the tents of Ham. And he led the people forth like sheep, and he led them like a flock in the wilderness. And he led them on safety, and they did not fear. And the sea flooded over their enemies. He brought them into the border of his holy place, this mountain that is right-handed gain. And he cast out the nations before them, and by a line he made a possession fall to them. He made the tribes of Israel to live in their tents, just like we are here. Yet they tested and provoked the Most High, and they did not keep his testimonies. But they turned back and betrayed like their fathers. They veered aside like a deceitful bow. For they enraged him with their high places, and they provoked him to jealousy with their molten images. When Elohim heard and was provoked to anger, and he utterly rejected Israel. Wow, how sad. And here we are, we're the descendants. Only by his mercy, by his love, are we here today, right? That Yahweh, because he's a redeemer, because he's a restorer, he said, I will still continue because of my promise to Abraham. I will still continue to work with these people. Because if not, if he said, you know what, I'm going to work with the Indians in India, none of us would be here today. We wouldn't be sitting here. So it's by his great mercy and his love that we're here. But we don't want to forget that Israel rejected him all the way through until he rejected the nation from that point. And that's why we have the second wilderness. Just like the Sukkah, the wilderness is a temporary dwelling to teach us to trust in Yahweh and to number our days. The Israelites did not learn this lesson, and they perished in the wilderness. And like I said, they were out here, right? They were in the wilderness. They were in a sanctified place, and they're not coming as Babylonians. They're not coming as people that had all kinds of possessions and were rich and, you know, and lived in comfort. They were coming as slaves. They're coming as slaves. They're uneducated. They can't. There's no reading or writing. They're illiterate. And they're slaves, and they're coming here in the perfect environment because their heart wasn't turned, because they didn't learn to number their days. And they're thinking, oh, we went through that now. Now we want to be on our own. You ain't going to tell us what to do, Moses. We're free now. They didn't learn to number their days, right? They didn't learn the lesson of Sukkot. That's the lesson of Sukkot. As we see the Sukkah, every single day, the leaves getting a little yellower, the fruits getting a little drier, we have to learn to number our days. It should humble us. It should humble us to realize, wow, I am so blessed that I've had 55 years on this life. I may not have another day, but if I have one more day, I am going to worship Yahweh. I don't have time to go to school for the next 15 years. I don't have time to try to earn all this money. I may only have one or two days. I may have one year. I got to serve Yahweh now. Because that's the test. That's the test. It's been the test for 6,000 years, but now we're in the very end of the end. And if we can't learn it now, when will we ever? That's why I say, if people can't leave society now, when open homosexuality is there, tattoos, earrings, piercings everywhere, a disdain from Yahweh like we've never seen since creation, then when are you going to leave society? When on earth would you leave? And you know what? You reap what you sow. People that don't want to leave, it's only for one reason. because they like it. Mm. You're not leaving because you like it. Because if you didn't like it, you'd be out of there in a second, right? If we brought people here to the wilderness like this, and they didn't like it, and now you come back the next year, how many of you think are going to come? You're only going to come if you liked it. You're only going to come if you benefited some way, if you were enhanced by it. But that's what we have to learn. Because until you humble yourself, you're never going to do that. And that's why I said in the beginning that the more independent and self-reliant a person is, the more talents he has, the healthier he is, the higher standard of living, the less likely he's going to worry about his relationship with Yahweh. We have to humble ourselves before Yahweh. We have to realize the awesome, unbelievable greatness and power of him in everything we look at. As we look at the stars and we look at the heavens and we look at the constellations and we say, what is man that you created him, and the son of man that you visit him? Because humility will help us to get to this spot, right? Hebrews 3 in verse 7, but the Israelites didn't learn it, sad to be. And we have to learn from their examples. Most of them bad examples, but you could learn from a bad example as well as a good example. Hebrews 3 and verse 7. Because of this, even as the Holy Spirit says, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts to provoke him, as the murmurers did in the day of temptation in the wilderness, right? We just heard about a murmuring spirit. There where your fathers tempted me, even though they saw my works for 40 years. Think how many miracles happened, right? Not just the miracle of the manna, but the miracle on the sixth day that had double of manna, that it didn't go bad. Times 52 weeks by 40 years, and see how many miracles Yahweh did just with that. But they tempted him in the wilderness, where your fathers tempted me, though they saw my works for 40 years. Because of this, I was angry with that generation. I said, they always go astray in their heart, and they did not know my ways, right? It starts in the heart. They didn't have a heart to be obedient to Yahweh. So I swore in my wrath, they will not enter my rest. Beware, therefore, my brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart which does not believe, and you will be cut off from the living Elohim. Wow. You don't want to perish in the wilderness. You know, the wilderness, like we said, it's not an easy place. It's a place of the scorpion and the place of the snake and the place of the dust, right? We're living it. People will watch this later. They'll say, hey, I think there's a scratch on your video camera. It's not a scratch. We're here in the dust of the wilderness. That's part of the learning, because that's what we are, right? To dust we are. To thus we shall return. 2 Corinthians 5 says, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were destroyed, we still have a building made from Elohim, a house not made with hands, eternal in heaven. Let me read that again, because this is a really, really profound scripture, right? Because as we're thinking of numbering our days, and we're thinking of how temporary this tabernacle is that we have here. Listen again. For if we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were destroyed, we still have a building made from heaven, a house not made with hands, eternal in heaven. For also in this we groan greatly, desiring to be clothed with our dwelling place out of heaven. If indeed being clothed, we shall be found, if indeed in being clothed, we shall not be found naked. For indeed, being in this earthly house, we groan because of its weight. Yet we are unwilling to leave it, yet rather wish to add to it, so that the death may be swallowed up by life, right? Remember what we said, one of the lessons we're learning in the wilderness, don't take so much stuff. And yet look what it says here. For if indeed, being in this earthly house, we groan because of the weight of it, right? The physical weight and all the things on it. And yet we're unwilling to leave it. People are so worried to leave it. Why? The minute you leave this earthly tabernacle, you enter the kingdom of Yahweh. But rather wish to add to it, so that the death may be swallowed up by life. Now he that has prepared us for this thing is Elohim, who has also given to us the down payment of his Spirit. Therefore we know and are convinced that so long as we dwell in the body, we are absent from home, from our Master. For we walk by faith and not by sight, right? We're here as sojourners, and it's for a time. But we shouldn't be looking toward trying to make this eternal, trying to expand what we have here. We should be looking toward our eternal home. Therefore, we know and are convinced that so long as we dwell in the body, we are absent from home, from our master, for we walk by faith, not by sight. This is why we are fully confident and think it good rather to be absent from the body and to be present with our master. Because of this, whether present or absent, we are striving to be pleasing to him. And that's what it's about. It's about putting that first in our life and taking our calling. This life is temporary, but our reward is eternal. Genesis 1, 27, 28, right? What did Yahweh create us for? Elohim created the man in his own image. In the image of Elohim, he created him. He created them, male and female. Verse 28, and Elohim blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the land and subdue it and rule over the fish and the birds of the heavens and the beasts and the creeping things. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the land. That is our destiny. So in these few short days you have in this life, whether that means 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, maybe up to 70, or if you're really blessed up to 80, that's our destiny. Because what is 70 or 80 years to eternity? It's absolutely nothing. It's nothing. It's a blip. It's a second. It's a snap of a finger. And why do we waste the little bit of time we have in this life to try to build for us when Yahweh is blessing us to build for him? Right? Because what's going to happen? Just like one of these pillars. If that breaks, we're not going to take down the whole tent. We're going to bring another one in its place. And each of us are living stones of that sanctuary. And if we don't do our job and we don't hold up that sanctuary, our pillar's going to go and another one will come in our place. So this is something that's serious for us to decide. And I believe it's one of the reasons we're here in the wilderness. Because like I said, it is a good environment. And it is an environment really to think about that and think about our temporalness and not have the distractions of Babylon. But at the same rate now, your heart has to give it over. And that's what wasn't there with the Israelites. They didn't have the heart to do it. 2 Corinthians 4. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 11. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 11. For we who live are always being delivered up to death on account of Yeshua, that also the life of Yeshua may be manifest in our mortal flesh. That's what it's about. Not us. It's not doing our own thing. It's not having our own goals and aspirations. It's eye for eye, tooth for tooth, life for life. He gave his life so that we could live and he could live in us. So now, for we who live are always being delivered up to death on account of Yeshua, that also the life of Yeshua may be manifest in our flesh. So that death indeed is close to us and life is near to you. But having the same spirit of faith, according to what has been written, I believe, therefore I spoke. We also believe, therefore we also speak. Knowing that he who raised up the master Yeshua will also raise us up through Yeshua and will present us with you. For all things are for your sake, that the abundant grace may through the thanksgiving of many abound to the glory of Elohim. Because of this we do not grow weary, but if indeed our outward man is being decayed, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For while the troubles of the present time are little in light, a great and limitless glory forever and ever is prepared for us. We do not rejoice in the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things being seen are temporal, right? Temporary dwellings. But the things which are not seen are everlasting. Praise Yahweh. That's what we're here for. That's what our hope has got to be. And it's hard in the facade of Babylon because the prince of the power of the airwaves and the time we're living in is putting these things in our mind and our head every day if you're there. But he has no bounty on us here in the wilderness. There's no way he can get us here in the wilderness as long as we submit to Yahweh, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. Hebrews 11 and verse 8, because you want to know something. The Bible tells us in Galatians 3:21 that if you be in Messiah, you are Abraham's seed and heir according to the promise. And we know heaven was never promised to Abraham. The promise to Abraham was the physical land of Israel. That was the promise to Abraham and his descendants. So if we are Abraham's descendants, we have the same promise to us. And how did Abraham live? Did he live as a landowner or did he live as a sojourner? Because Abraham died without receiving any of the promises. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. Having been called out by faith, Abraham obeyed to go forth to a place which he was going to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not understanding where he went, right? He didn't ask questions. Abraham, get up and go. Abraham went. Didn't ask, where am I going? What am I going for? What do I do from here? Just Yahweh said to go, and he went. By faith, he resided as a foreigner in a land of promise, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, and joint heirs of the same promise, temporary dwellings, right? For he looked forward to a city having the foundation of which the builder and maker is Yahweh. That's what we said. The wilderness is the only road to the promised land. You got to go through here, but the wilderness is not the promised land. Right? We're looking for a city, like I said yesterday, not earthly Jerusalem. We're looking for a city with golden streets. We're looking for a city with the master and the king as Yeshua. That's what we're looking for, the heavenly Jerusalem. Drop down to verse 13. These all died by way of faith, not having received the promises, but seeing them afar off and being persuaded and having embraced and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those saying such things make clear that they seek a fatherland. And truly, if they remembered from where they came out, they would have had time to return. But now they stretch forth to a better, that is a heavenly land. Therefore, Yahweh is not ashamed of them, for him to be called their Elohim, for he prepared a city for them. Right? This world, everything is a temporary dwelling. That's what Sukkot is. Our body is a temporary dwelling. Our sukkah is a temporary dwelling. Our life is a temporary dwelling. But what we're looking for is an eternal city, a city that is forever, where the temporary becomes permanent. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 10. He says, therefore, brothers, rather be diligent to make your calling and election sure. For doing these things, you will never fall. For so will be richly furnished to you the entrance into the eternal kingdom of our Master and Savior, Yeshua Messiah. And for this reason, I am not wearied in reminding you continuously of these things, although you know them well and are established in this truth. But I deem it right, so long as I am in this tabernacle, to stir you up by a reminder, knowing that shortly I must depart this life, as indeed our Master Yeshua Messiah made it clear to me. And I will also be diligent to cause you always to have memory of these things after my departure. Wow, he's writing this right before he's ready to die. And he's saying he's ready to leave his tabernacle, his temporary dwelling. And he's saying, I know I don't even need to remind you these things. But he's being a good Jewish mama. He wants to remind them because he knows he's ready to go and he's happily ready to go for his way. And a matter of fact, when his time came and the story is read that way, that he was in Rome and they were coming after him and the believers got him to the outside of the city. They somehow, I don't know if they took him through a basket or they somehow got him out. And when he got to the gate of the city, he saw Yeshua there. And Yeshua said, where are you going, Peter? And he remembered what Yeshua said, that he would glorify him to be martyred. So he turned around and he went back and he told them, I want you to crucify me upside down because I don't feel worthy enough to be crucified the way that my Savior was. So that's the way he glorified Yeshua, and that's the way he left this tabernacle. But while he lived in that tabernacle, he lived every day to Yahweh. And this is somebody, remember that denied him three times on that faithful night of that last Passover. But he certainly made up for it later. And that's what he said. When you get the Spirit, strengthen your brothers and sisters. Feed the sheep, feed the lambs, feed the ewes. And he did it. 1 Peter 1 and verse 17. Two more scriptures will be finished. 1 Peter 1 and verse 17. He says, if you call on the Father, the one judging according to the work of each one without respect of faces, conduct the time of your sojourning in fear, right? First gateway to the kingdom is the fear of Yahweh. I'm going to be giving you a message during the Sukkot on the seventh gateway. I have another gateway now, and it's true worship. That's going to be the seventh gateway. This is the first gateway. Without the fear of Yahweh, there's nowhere to go. So he says, conduct the time of your soul journey in fear, knowing that not with corruptible things like silver or gold were you redeemed from your worthless way of life handed down from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Messiah as a lamb without blemish and without spot. Indeed, having been preordained for this very purpose before the foundation of the world, but revealed in the last times because of you, the ones believing in Elohim through him, he raising him from the dead, and giving glory to him so that your faith and hope may be in Yahweh, having purified your souls in the obedience of the truth through the Spirit, so sincere brotherly love, love one another fervently out of a pure heart, being regenerated not by corruptible seed, but incorruptible, through the living word of Yahweh which abides forever, because all flesh is as grass, and all the glory of man is the flower of the grass. The grass was dried, and its flower fell out, but the word of Yahweh remains forever, and this is the very word that was announced to you. So he says, our life is like the grass. One day it looks green and strong and there, and the next day the sun comes, and it's burned up, and it goes into the fire. That is what life is. It goes very quickly, and it comes and goes. This life is as fading grass. We must appreciate that we've been given the word of truth and the blood of Yeshua. Last scripture, Matthew 16. Matthew 16. In verse 24. Then Yeshua said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and let him bear his torture stake and let him follow me. For whoever may desire to save his life will lose it, but whoever may lose his life for my sake will find it. For what will a man be benefited if he should gain the whole world but forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For it is necessary for the Son of Man to come in the glory of his Father, and then with his holy cherubs he will reward each man according to his work. So it's impossible to please Yahweh without faith. For those coming to him must believe he is, and he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So if we know our life is temporal, if we know that even if a baby was born today, 70, 80 years at best is going to go by really, really fast, and yet all of us are up there already, 40, 50, maybe 60, 70, then why are we waiting one more day to make this commitment? I pray that we learn this lesson of Sukkot, that we are but a sukkah. Our body is a sukkah. We're a temporary dwelling that's here. Life is a test, and we have a great reward waiting for us if we overcome in this life. Sukkah, tabernacles, teaches us to number our days and shows us how temporal life is. Just as the fruit of the sukkah and the branches will wither and change color in one cycle of seven, our life is simply a few more cycles of seven. It is just a few more on this earth. Let us honor Yahweh with the life he has given us to worship him and to use the gifts he's given us to bear fruit for his kingdom. Let us love our neighbor as ourselves and give glory to Yeshua for suffering and dying and paying the penalty of our sins so we can rule with him in his kingdom. We are a type of a sukkah, a temporary dwelling, just like we will celebrate here in this next week. May we learn the lessons our forefathers missed in this very same wilderness and be ready for Yeshua's return. Yahweh bless. Hag Sameach.